Yeah, baby. Scotty's on fire. It's the lightning round. Every Tuesday, we do it for 1 hour. Scott answers every question in 3 minutes or less. Join us on Friday nights for the loquacious version, 2 hours and more extensive answers. It's August 29th, 2023. Happy birthday to my dear sister, Linda. And this is episode 93 of Ask the Inspector. Did you get my sister anything for her birthday, Scott?
I did.
Okay, good.
I've prepared a very special program for her, so hopefully she's watching.
Oh, all right. I hope so, too. She can watch the recording if she's not watching live. So Scott published an article that I know for him was a bit difficult to write about Prigozhin, who was just killed a few days ago or a week ago, or I'm not sure how long ago it was now, maybe a week. And why don't you share with the audience what you were wrestling with, why you found it so difficult to write this particular piece?
Well, normally when I try to write, when I write about something, I it's very easy for me to put on my, you know, my hat of impartiality and just let the facts go where they might. But here, with Wagner, look, I like many people was captured by the story, the narrative of Wagner and what it was doing in support of the Russian military effort in the special military operation. The Battle of Bakhmut caught everybody's imagination, and while that battle was raging, I visited Russia, and during that visit, I had the opportunity to meet many Wagner fighters, veterans, and to meet some senior people from the from the Wagner center in St. Petersburg. And it's difficult for me to be impartial when it comes to Wagner. I'm pro Wagner, and I wore that on my sleeve. I don't think I ever hid that fact. But Prigozhin's revolt in June, and it was an insurrection. I viewed it as an act of treason. And I know that there are many people in the Wagner organization that take umbrage with that, probably very strongly so. But I'm old school. You don't rise up and take arms against your commander in chief. And that's, of course, what Yevgeny Prigozhin, Dmitry Utkin, and 8,000 Wagner soldiers did. And I wrote about it, and and at the time I called them out and said, I think it's an act of treason. I think it stained the reputation of Wagner. And I did what no journalist is supposed to do. I took it personally. I mean, I was really taken aback by that. And, I've been tracking Wagner since then and the restructuring taking place. But when Prigozhin died, my problem was how do I write about this objectively? How do I write about this, with the kind of objective impartiality that one needs to approach this story? And I spent a long time wrestling with this article. It was almost finished several times before I pulled it back, re-examined it, rewrote things, and I was waiting too. It was difficult to write. If you didn't know for certain that Prigozhin was, in fact, dead, that they hadn't positively identified his body. But when they made that final positive identification, that was the final straw. It pushed me over the finish line. I finished the article and I published it, but I wrote it with a caveat. I said right up front that this is a difficult article for me to write because I'm not impartial when it comes to Wagner. I am burdened by two competing prejudices. The first one is the immense respect I have for Wagner as an organization, a military organization, and their competence on the battlefield. And the second is the utter disdain I have for what Prigozhin did to Vladimir Putin. There's no justification for that. So it was difficult to write this article without having that emotion bleed into it. I think I succeeded. I think I came across with an impartial article, but I think it was important because anybody who knows me, I wanted them to know up front that this was not an easy article to write. So
yeah. Well, Prigozhin is certainly a larger than life figure. I mean, he and Wagner even produced a film called Best in Hell, which I think is what you got, where you got the title of your article from. And it was a dramatic film, but it looks almost like a documentary. I think you said before when we showed some of this footage that it's all pretty realistic, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, Wagner didn't shy away from the fact that war is hell. Best in Hell, you know, basically that comes from a saying that the Wagner guys, you know, we're all going to go to hell, but when we get there, we're going to be the best in hell, meaning they don't give a damn what you think. They're going to go for it. But I've seen this movie. It's very realistic. It's very violent. Wagner fighters played roles in this, not just actors. And the idea was to portray the war and its horrific reality. And in doing so, you elevate the stature of Wagner even more. An interesting thing about this film is that it portrayed the Ukrainians in a positive light as well, not in terms of ideology. This war had no ideology in it. This was purely a military fight, military force against military force. And it showed both forces as being extraordinarily competent, extraordinarily dedicated, and extraordinarily lethal. And I think you walked away from this this film just saying, I don't want to have anything to do with this fight. It's an extraordinarily bloody fight. It was very realistically depicted in every aspect of the fight, the use of drones, the counter battery aspect, very realistic as a former artilleryman to watch them employ tactics that I was, that I was training on back in the 1980s to see them use similar tactics today. It was a realistic movie. It doesn't come off as traditional propaganda. Normally in traditional propaganda, you pit the good side against the evil side. Here it was the whites against the yellows. You sort of were rooting for the whites to win because of their military mission that they had defined at the beginning. But the yellows didn't come across as evil. The yellows just came across as a very determined enemy. They were fighting the whites and had some success against the whites.
Well, you mentioned the lack of bias. On the other side of the coin, our beloved President Joe Biden revealed his bias, by suggesting that Putin was behind the killing of Prigozhin. And you mentioned in your article that you were critical of him for that, although he didn't say it explicitly. He definitely had left one with that impression. Did you hear Nikki Haley in the Republican debate last week? She was even worse. We have a clip of it. She just flat out said that Putin did it. Here it is.
Look at what Putin did today. He killed Prigozhin. When I was at the UN, the Russian ambassador suddenly died. This guy is a murderer, and you are choosing a murderer over a pro-American country.
Look at her eyes. I
mean, she's an evil one. Yeah, she's crazy.
Well, not just that. She also, during that same debate, made an argument that had been made by others, that including Lindsey Graham, that the expenditure of taxpayer money in Ukraine is great because it results in dead Russians without any American casualties. And this is a good thing. And then got to get the crazy Nikki Haley eyes. Dead Russians, dead Russians, dead Russians. She is unhinged, ladies and gentlemen. She is insane and not worthy of leading this great country.
Yeah, she's making the rounds on the talk shows saying how the percentage of money we give isn't really that much compared to the other nations, and just more and more money to Ukraine.
More, more, more. But the good news is her debate performance, I think, increased her support from 0.7% to 0.83%, meaning that she is not going to be the Republican nominee. The Republican nominee.
Yeah, but I've seen some press reports where they're trying to make it out like even though she doesn't have that much support, the amount of support that she gained from prior to it is greater than the others or something. That's what they're trying to say.
Right, but when you go from one to two, that's 100% gain in support.
Ramaswamy is the guy to watch.
Well, except that he's going to be exposed as the corrupt businessman that he is, with no moral principles and you know, whatever.
All right. Well, let's talk about that more on Friday night when we have more time. From our beloved audience, the first question is from Random Indian Guy. Remember, Scott answers every question in 3 minutes or less. We'll get as many as we can in this hour. Why was Wagner's military leadership willing to go along with Prigozhin? Was it money? Why did these patriots choose to be more loyal to one man than to their own country?
When you look at the founding document of Wagner, which was dated 1 May 2014, it listed the specific requirements of the director and of the commander's council. And the two things stood out. One was the stated purpose mission statement. In the mission statement of the Wagner founding document was that you would never go against Vladimir Putin. And two was that you would never do anything that was against Russia. The way that this march of justice was being portrayed to Wagner was that it was actually in defense of Putin against the corruption and inefficiencies of the ineptitude, the incompetence of Shoigu and Gerasimov, the Minister of Defense and the Chief of the General Staff. Not every member of Wagner bought into that. The vast majority of Wagner remained in their barracks. But they went along because they bought into the propaganda. Wagner is a heavily propagandized unit. They have brainwashed themselves. They are very loyal to themselves. And they also, in that founding document, promised to resolve all problems in a collegial fashion, meaning that you ride for the brand. You don't do anything that's harmful to the brand. And so when Prigozhin is the director and Dmitry Utkin as the senior commander in the commander of councils said that the march of justice was needed to help Putin and save Russia, some of the Wagner guys went along with it because to them it made sense. Afterwards, I think the majority of them realized they did the wrong thing, but they didn't view it as going against Putin or trying to betray Russia.
Okay, the next question comes from Tom's friend in Colchester, England. How likely is it that it was Prigozhin himself who caused the plane to crash? He didn't have a bright future, and both sides, the West and the Russians, would be pointing the finger at the other as the culprit. It would be his final FU to them all.
No, I don't think so. I mean, I don't know Prigozhin personally, so I can't say that I've taken the measure of the man, but just based upon who he is and the passion that he had displayed in defense of Wagner and the plans that he had for Wagner. This was not a suicidal man. This is not a man that would take his own life in this fashion. And he also was somebody who was very loyal to Wagner as an organization and to the men in Wagner. And the idea that he would deliberately murder his compatriots. I think you to accept that implies that the person that buys into that has no clue of what Wagner is and what Wagner's membership is. These are people, look, I come from the Marine Corps, and we are brainwashed from day one that the Marine Corps is the brand. We will not do anything to disgrace the Marine Corps. We will die before the Marine Corps is disgraced. This is in our DNA, and this is sort of why the Marines are a step above, because we have bought into the propaganda. And Wagner is similar, of a similar inclination. They believe in the brand. They believe in their cause. They're not out. They won't betray the cause. They won't betray Wagner. And Prigozhin killing himself and taking Wagner now is the ultimate betrayal of Wagner. And I just don't think that that's in his DNA.
Okay. Richard C. Schmidt claims that we're hard to find. He had to give up on Rumble. It's not that hard, Richard. rumble.com/US Tour of Duty. We link to it on all our web pages on the Substack and also Scott Ritter merch. We link to it. When you see that, ask the inspector, and you see that word Rumble that's hyperlinked, click on it, Richard. It's not that difficult. Not that difficult. The next question is from, well, let me do it this way. Sorry about that. It's easier to see it this way. Matthew Panchison from the United States of America. It seems the West is abandoning Zelensky because he is a loser, leaving him holding the death and destruction money bag. There's a Russian saying, a fish rots from the head down. It is sad to see many of your politicians and people giddy about killing Russians and Ukrainians. What do you think the Winston Churchill of our time will do now?
If he was smart, he'd go on a foreign trip and never return. He'd resign and seek safe haven in one of the multiple multi-million dollar domiciles that he has procured with the people of Ukraine's money, U.S. taxpayer money filtered through them. But the thing about Zelensky is he is a he is your classic narcissist. I mean, almost everybody in the entertainment industry is. They exist to because they're show people. They exist because they want people to appreciate them. And he is in the ultimate theater of life right now. He is the president, a wartime president of a country that has attracted the largest audience he's ever had, a global audience. And I think he's sort of addicted to that. I think he enjoys having the attention to travel and be received and such. And I think, unfortunately for him, is that he can't walk away. That it's like a moth drawn to flame. He is he knows he's going to get burned, but he keeps coming back to the light, keeps coming back to the light. And I think he's going to return to the light one too many times, and he's going to die, either from the Russians or from his own people. But I don't think he has the ability to adequately assess when the time is right for him to go. Because, hey, Zelensky, if you're watching, the time's right now. Go, leave.
Okay, somebody in the comments says there are two U.S. tour of duty channels. Oh, you know what? I think he's right about that. I'll delete the O, and that may be what's causing the confusion. Thank you for that, Croaky 82. You are absolutely right. The next question comes from, hold on, Kim, in either North or South Korea. Why do you not talk about the implications of IMF danger in East Asia? The U.S. sent an Ohio sub with Trident missiles to dock in South Korea. And if the U.S. installs nuclear cruiser hypersonics in Korea, Okinawa, Taiwan, it's just a few minutes to Beijing. Isn't this like a reverse Russia, Finland, Ukraine missile danger?
Absolutely. I mean, you're 100% correct. I don't know that I haven't talked about it. I just don't talk about it often because the Korean Peninsula hasn't been a topic that has been addressed on this program, but I write about it extensively. I've been writing about Korea denuclearization and the threat of American nuclear policy in the region on several platforms. I just published an article a while ago in Energy Intelligence about this very issue. If you go to my Substack or go to scottritterextra.com, we have other articles. And I think, right, Jeff, they can find you'll find it there. So I have been writing about this extensively. I speak about it when asked. It's a good question. It's a viable question. You're 100% correct. The threat posed by America's forward deployed nuclear forces is existential in nature for China. That the United States could be in a position with forward deployed assets of this nature to launch a decapitation strike against the Chinese, which is one of the reasons why the Chinese are modernizing their nuclear force to ensure that they have a viable retaliatory strike capability that serves as a deterrent to say, even if you hit us first, we still will have enough weapons to destroy you or do significant damage to you. Therefore, don't hit us first. But you're right to point it out. This is why arms control is so important, and this is why it's imperative that the United States begin engaging the Chinese in bilateral fashion. We can't buy into the U.S. saying, oh, we've been wanting to talk to them, but only together with the Russians. China isn't going to play the game of being the junior partner in a trilateral disarmament agreement. If the United States wants to talk disarmament with China, they need to speak nation to nation, independent of any other outside power. And it's up to the United States to undertake measures that prevent the Chinese from building up their own nuclear capabilities. China's in the process of expanding their nuclear arsenal, which should be the last thing anybody wants, but they have no choice, largely because of what you just outlined, the forward-leaning posture of the United States. I remind everybody before the whip goes, when the whip comes down, that under the Trump administration, there was a senior official who spoke at the Arms Control Association who said that it was the goal of the Trump administration that every morning when Chinese and Russian leaders woke up, that they would know whether or not this was the day that the United States was going to attack them with nuclear weapons without any reason, without any cause, that he wanted the Chinese and the Russians to fear that. The same nuclear posture that empowered that statement exists today under Biden. And I guarantee you there's a generation of American nuclear theorists who think the same thing. They want the Chinese to be worried every day. Is this the day America's going to nuke them?
Well, as predicted, you didn't quite beat the whip. You anticipated it. What am I trying to do here? No, we already did that one. Dmitry in the European Union. Is it probable for generals to prevent Joseph Biden from initiating the nuclear war before the election?
I think American personnel are always on the lookout for the politicization of nuclear war. We know back in the Nixon era, when Watergate was going down and Nixon was often drunk, that the generals were very, very attuned to not taking a drunken call from the president ordering him to nuke Russia because X, Y, and Z. And when you talk to, when you hear people like General Milley and others talk about under Trump, what would happen if Trump was to do something like that, they talk about the law of war, the issue of proportional strike, are the various constitutional elements in place to make this illegal? Because remember, the United States is signatory to international humanitarian law. Generals cannot execute an order that constitutes a war crime. So before they launch nuclear weapons, they have to ensure that all the prerequisite things are in order to make it a legitimate order. And so I believe that if Joe Biden was mentally incapacitated or otherwise was issuing orders that shouldn't be issued for no cause, that there is sufficient checks and balance within the U.S. military system, because regardless of what I think of General Milley and others, they did take an oath to uphold and defend the Constitution. I believe they take that oath seriously, and I do believe that they would not execute an unlawful order.
But, you know, he's going to pull some kind of a stunt, maybe having to do with another round of COVID and vaccines or something.
Yeah, that's, I mean, it's happening. There are people talk about putting masks back on and, you know, all this stuff. It's just insanity. But that is, now we're going to get the email. What are you saying, Scott? Are you a COVID denier? Are you a COVID denier?
Well, you know, I think the truth. this time around, there's going to be a lot more COVID deniers, too. I think it's going to be a lot more resistance.
Well, we'll be able to quote the Centers for Disease Control. In regards to when people say, if you don't get the vaccine, you're going to die. No, that's not true. I actually have a higher percentage of dying if I get the vaccine. But anyways.
Well, we're not on YouTube anymore, so we can say that.
Well, that's right. We could have gotten banned. Happy birthday, Mom.
Happy birthday. All right. Let's see. What else do we have here? Fu from China. It looks like an Asian NATO comprising of the Five Eyes plus Japan, South Korea, Taiwan, the Philippines, and India is now coalescing to encircle and contain China. How do you think China can break out of this encirclement?
Just wait. Japan's in the process of dumping tons and tons and tons of radioactive water into the Pacific. Enraging South Korea, who's already issued diplomatic. The Japanese and South Koreans hate each other for cause. Japan occupied, did horrible things. South Koreans have never forgiven them. So they're not. Taiwan, what happens in January? An election. Is it possible that the opposition will win who seeks to have better relations with China than the current political party? Absolutely. India is a member of BRICS. BRICS is the game-changing thing. Why would India jump ship from a winning team and join the sinking Titanic? Ain't going to happen. That's just, again, like a ship pulling upside the Titanic saying, come on board, guys, you're sinking. Everybody jump on board. But not India. India's on board the good ship. They're going to jump on the Titanic and die. So I don't see any of that happening. I see basically this alliance falling apart from the inherent weaknesses of what they stand for. What do they stand for? What do they want? China is about economic prosperity. The others are about military struggle. I think the world's looking at Ukraine saying, I don't want to be a part of that. I don't want to be part of a conflict that destroys everything. So look, Modi and Xi Jinping had a very nice talk in South Africa during the BRICS conference when they talked about the need to solidify the border, bringing an end to the border confrontations. They're going to resolve their issues. And when they do, they're going to come together and there's not going to be anything the United States or the Five Eyes or Japan and South Korea can do about it.
All right. I'm taking Alaskan seafood out of my diet, says WS84 on Rumble. Well, we talked about this issue in the last episode. All right, let's go on to our next question from Anna, or maybe it's Anna in Bavaria, Germany. Germany just got permission to buy the Arrow 3 air defense system from Israel. German news hailed the purchase, but en passant also mentioned that the system has a success ratio of 55% and struggles to intercept hypersonic missiles. Could you please give your assessment on whether the acquisition was reasonable? And even more important than that, you know what en passant means?
In passing?
Pretty much, yeah. By the way, you got it.
En passant.
Well, there you go. I didn't say it that way, though. But, yeah. The Marine in me has been around enough, what do we call them, assholes, who sprinkle their language with, but en passant.
Pretentious, yes. En passant.
Thank you. There you go. You're eating in my time, Jeff. You're going to get me whipped. You're going to hurt me.
I didn't even start the clock yet. I'm a fair man, Scott. Now I'll start it.
Ah, God, your fairness hurts me. The Arrow 3 is not that good of a system. Germany, like all of Europe, is confronted with the reality of Ukraine, where Ukraine has deployed some of the best European air defense systems to no avail. Russia has penetrated them. Russia is pounding the living dog poop out of Ukraine. It's a total defeat of European air defense. So Germany is desperate to find a solution. They've gone to the Arrow 3, but as was mentioned en passant, the Arrow 3 is not that good. 55% rate's not very good. And it's going to be even less against an enemy that knows what they're doing. Remember, Israel's not fought an enemy that has conducted a sustained modern aerial assault against Israel. They're fighting against Hezbollah, fighting Katyushkas. They're fighting against Hamas, fighting homemade rockets, but they haven't gone up against modern ballistic missiles or modern drones or drones and ballistic missiles in combination or cruise missiles or hypersonic missiles. I can guarantee that the Arrow 3 cannot shoot down it's colloquial, but those damn Germans. Colloquial, that's a big word. God, that's pretentious. But the point is, it's not a very good system. Germany is desperate. They're buying it, but it's going to solve nothing. The good news for Germany is that Russia has no intention of firing either cruise missiles, ballistic missiles, or drones against Germany. But if Germany wants to waste their money in a time of economic decline and deindustrialization, I'm sure the Israelis enjoy the money they'll be receiving.
All right. En passant, we have another question here from Henry Larson in Wisconsin. Are you familiar with the work of the Substack writer called Aurelian? He guards his privacy, but what is known is that he's a retired civil servant of the British government, probably in the foreign ministry, who now lives in France. His Substack is called Trying to Understand the World.
I have on occasion in Twitter clicked on to things that people attach and they take me to this Substack. But I'm not subscribed and I don't follow. I can guarantee that I will after this, because that sounds like the kind of guy that you want to subscribe to and follow. I love to get that kind of insight. I respect people with experience. They see the world through a different lens, and you get a different perspective, a different perception. And I'm in the business of collecting perspectives and collecting perceptions. So I'll be collecting his in the future. Thank you very much for the tip.
All right. Speaking of Twitter, or X, as some are wont to say, I was suspended last night for 12 hours. About 8 of those hours, I was sleeping anyway. So when I woke up, I was back. So it wasn't
What did you do?
Well, I thought you'd never ask. You know how I was criticizing that kid boy Harry, the Harry kid. I showed a little.
Oh yeah.
I can't stand that kid. And then when you post negative criticism on people, then you keep seeing their feed because the algorithm keeps spitting back at you wherever you're commenting. So it's like, I'm in quicksand now. I can't.
Yeah, it's the opposite. Right.
So he made some dopey comment about gun control and refer to the college students who were seen jumping off the window ledge. And all I did was suggest to him that maybe he should jump off a window ledge.
Shame on you, Jeff.
As soon as I did that, it was an automatic thing. Right after, it's like not even anybody reported me. As soon as I did that, it was, you must remove this tweet. You're glorifying violence. And so that was my offense.
But you removed the tweet, and they still banned you for 12 hours?
12 hours, yeah. That's not bad. I'll take it,
Especially if 8 of them are sleeping.
Yeah, right, exactly. So if you're going to say something that gets you suspended for 12 hours, do it a little bit before bedtime.
Before you go to bed, yeah.
Yeah. That's my tip for the day. That was my takeaway from this. That's how I learned my lesson. Now, I don't know if this guy's name is Tomas or he just left out the H by mistake, but let's call him Mr. Payne from Dannemora in Clinton County, New York. That's what's the name of that town the Clintons live in? Chappaqua.
In Westchester. Dannemora is actually home of the one of the largest state prisons. It's where the maximum security prisoners are held, and there was a high profile escape from Dannemora a couple years ago of two guys there. One was killed, the other one was brought back to justice. Anyways.
This is a question from a Vietnam combat veteran, a Marine. Many of us smoked pot while in the U.S. military. There were no urine tests back then, not until 1980. Colonel McGregor, yourself, plus myself, believe the U.S. military was a powerful force between 1945 and 1980. What is your problem with weed? Maybe you should hit a joint. It might relax you.
Is that a joint, man?
I don't have any problem with weed. I have friends who smoke weed. some of my friends smoke weed. The problem is conditioning. I was brought into the military when doing marijuana was not allowed, and I was somebody who complied with the rules. And it's just not been part of my lifestyle. I drink beer. I like beer. I don't drink whiskey. I don't like it. But it's just, I don't smoke cigarettes either. So it's, the idea of inhaling smoke is just not something that's in my head. But look, I live a life of constant pain. I have arthritis. I have neuropathy. I have broken bones. I have torn muscles. God almighty, I should be smoking dope or maybe eating an edible or something. I'm not against it, man. I'm on your side. I should probably do it because it might help the pain and it might help me relax. It would be a hell of a show if I did that. But the thing is, I can't get myself to do it just because I've been conditioned not to.
You said hell of a show. That gives me an idea. We should do it right here on the show. Remember when Elon Musk went on Joe Rogan's show and he took a hit off the joint? Come
That's
on, everybody who's anybody is smoking weed.
Yeah,
I feel so all alone.
I'm sure Bobby did it too.
But, must get stoned.
I'm enough of a control freak that I don't want to cede control to somebody else. And I just am afraid that if I smoke dope, I would drop, especially in public in front of people, I would drop my guard. And I just, that's not what I want.
All right.
Jeff's seen me drunk. He knows there's a different me. I think you, was it you or somebody else who was telling about, you know, Scott with no beers is this Scott Ritter?
Yeah. The three stages of inebriation. The first, when Scott is sober, he will not swear in front of women. After one or two drinks, he will swear in front of women, but right after he does it, he apologizes. After the third drink, Scott swears in front of women or anybody, no apology.
Doesn't matter. So imagine me not be a pretty sight.
Like clockwork, that was predictable. All right. I can't believe I got to do this a certain way. Sorry about that. Foo in Chicago, do you think the day will come when Latin America starts rebelling against the United States in the way Africa is starting to rebel against France now?
I hope so. I would like to see every country in the world function as a truly sovereign place where their resources are exploited for the benefit of their people, that they seek out mutually beneficial relations with other nations, that they cede nothing to other nations. And it would mean also that the United States has stopped behaving as a quasi-imperial power. But then I take a look at the, I'm going to take 2-week vacation, use it then, let your brain body adjust and agree to it. Okay, maybe. I doubt it. But it's just not going to happen, guys. But the where we're saying not Latin America. Look, the United States, you know, we have this lifestyle we have because of the unequal relationship we have with the rest of the world and our desire to acquire resources that we need to function at prices that are below market so that we can make a profit, et cetera, et cetera. If we had to pay market value for all the things we consume, we couldn't afford to live the lifestyle we live. And until the American people are willing to accept a massive reduction in lifestyle, or we have a revolution that automatically makes that adjustment, transferring the wealth from the 1% downwards, it still requires us to, you know, overall reduce the quality of life for people until we got a new balance. America's a nation for the rich. We're designed for the rich. The American dream requires us to become rich. That's what we do. Nobody says the American dream is about becoming mediocre or becoming poor. It's always about getting out there, getting yours, working to get yours, et cetera. And we do that in a world that we create that is unequal in terms of being an American and elsewhere. There is, we are definitely the exceptional nation. America is the exception. And until we change that, nothing's going to change. Even if these other nations want to break away, they won't be able to because we'll threaten to blow them to hell.
All right, a lot of people with strong feelings about cannabis, THC, weed. That's not it. Josh from upstate New York, your thoughts on a possible interview of Putin by Tucker Carlson.
I'm so jealous. That son of a bitch. No, look, I wish Tucker Carlson the very best. I really do. There was a time when he and I didn't see eye to eye. I think I've told the story before of wanting to punch him out live on TV and almost doing that. But Mr. Paul Begala intervened. Tucker has reached out, he called me, and we had a long, long discussion. And that's water under the bridge. We're past that. I think we share common objectives of helping America be all it can be. But done in a way that doesn't require us to go to war against Russia or others. And it appears that Tucker shares my goal and objective of trying to be realistic about Russia. Look, his interview with President Trump broke all sorts of records. I think it's the 260 million impressions, which is just sort of mind-boggling if you understand anything about Twitter impressions. And I would think that if he did score an interview with Vladimir Putin, the president of Russia, that record could even be broken. But here's the problem. It's clickbait. It's a gimmick. And the Russians have to be convinced to view it as something other than that. This can't be about promoting the Tucker brand. This can't be about getting clickbaits. Russia is a very serious country, and Vladimir Putin is a very serious leader. This is an interview that I don't think Tucker should try and carry out until he's visited Russia, something that he has recently even said he has no intention of doing. Well, Tucker, if you're not going to visit Russia, if you're not going to take the time to know Russia, understand Russia from Russians, firsthand experience, I don't think you're going to get the interview. I could be wrong on this, but why would Putin speak to you? Putin's given speeches, lots of speeches. He's explained the Russian position over and over and over again. Putin's not a gimmick. He's not something that he's not going to allow himself to be used as a gimmick to get clicks. Tucker's going to have to do something to convince the Russians that this is an interview that's not just beneficial for Tucker, because it is, but it's beneficial for Russia. That's an opportunity for the Russian president to communicate with Americans in a way that is necessary at the time and can't be replicated elsewhere. You're going to have a hard time convincing Putin that it's necessary to communicate with Americans now, because the gap between Tucker Carlson and his audience and Biden and the U.S. government is huge. So it's not going to generate any discernible shift in U.S. policy. And the Republican base is so ignorant about Russia and is so infected with Russophobia that any effort by Tucker to try and humanize Putin will backfire. People say, well, you're a Russian apologist, etc. This is why I think Tucker, before he talks about interviewing the Russian president, needs to go to Russia, spend 2 weeks in Russia meeting people, talking to him. Then he might be able to do a good job at the interview.
Meow. Meow.
Do you know who's that? You don't recognize that voice?
Meow.
No.
It's Tucker Carlson.
Good God.
I don't remember exactly what it was, but it was like somebody like, for example, Lindsey Graham, the perfume princess, was acting all tough. And then Tucker followed that with a sarcastic meow, like, you're not really that tough. That was the comment.
Oh, so basically you're telling me I'm not that tough. Got it.
Well, it's the only Tucker Carlson clip I had ready. So.
Meow.
All right. Don't do that, man. It's like showing Tucker Carlson on Dancing with the Stars. Just don't do it.
Robeson from Barcelona. If Tucker Carlson interviews Putin, couldn't we revive the old fairness doctrine and have Vladimir Soloviev interview Biden? Ha ha ha. The likely chance of one and the utter inconceivability of the other says everything about these two leaders.
I like the idea, and I'm sure that Vladimir Soloviev would like the idea. Although I don't know. Let me put it this way. I don't know what Tucker Carlson's opinion of Vladimir Putin is or anything, but I'm pretty confident that Tucker would seek to do the most professional job possible interviewing Putin, and would do it in a way that was respectful to Putin as the leader of Russia and as a man. I don't know if Vladimir Soloviev could do the same thing with Biden. I'm not saying he's not professional. I'm just saying that it's hard at this point in time to treat Biden with respect. The other thing is, I doubt Biden's handlers would let him have such an interview, because, you know, Putin is smart. He's smart. I'll say this, Tucker, no offense. He's smarter than you. He's smarter than me. Very smart man. So Putin's got nothing to worry about. Biden may have been intelligent at one point in time. I can't call him smart, because he's the dumbest intelligent man I've ever met in my life. But I knew Joe Biden when his brain actually worked. Couldn't call him stupid, but you could call him ignorant. Biden today just doesn't have it. He couldn't hook and jab, and Soloviev would wipe the floor with him with questions, follow-on questions, and Biden would just be confused, addled, drool, and then have to leave and eat ice cream and sniff babies. So I shouldn't have said that. But no, yeah, it's a nice thought, but it isn't going to happen.
judge my physical, mental, my physical as well as my mental fitness.
I think that Don Lemon could wipe the floor with Joe Biden.
Please don't ever do that to me again. Don Lemon.
All right, let's take a question from Rumble coming in live now. That's rumble.com/US Tour of Duty. And there's a little dollar sign there in the live chat. Feel free to give it a test run, as clearly a decoy did. Thank you very much for the donation. Let's see. Ukraine casualties, 40,000 in recent offensive, according to the U.S. and Russia. But the Pentagon estimates as of April were only 17,000 dead. Is the earlier Pentagon number realistic?
Absolutely not. The Ukrainians had suffered hundreds of thousands of dead by the beginning of summer last year. By the time summer was over last year, that number had grown to over 200,000. Earlier this year, prior to the Battle of Bakhmut, we're talking 300,000. They lost 70,000 in the Battle of Bakhmut. And now with 40,000, the number is up over 400,000 dead. So don't believe the Pentagon numbers.
All right, let's see what we got going here. Simon from Down Under. That's Australia, Scott, in case you didn't know. The International Campaign to Abolish Nuclear Weapons, ICAN is the acronym, was founded in Melbourne in 2007. ICAN was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize in 2017. Why was this met with indifference at best and disdain at worst? What do you think of its work?
Look, I believe in the abolishment of nuclear weapons, and I support ICAN, and I think they were deserving of the Nobel Peace Prize, unlike Barack Hussein Obama, who received the Nobel Peace Prize for the simply getting elected as the U.S. president, and then went on to be one of the greatest warmongers in the history of U.S. presidencies. ICAN was deserving of that. Why was it received the way it did? Who was president in 2017? Donald Trump.
Trump.
You think he was going to sing praises of this group? This is a man who was restructuring the American nuclear posture to create possibilities for first strike. This is a man who operationalized the usable nuclear weapon, the new version of it, the W-76-2. Low yield weapon put on a Trident missile on Ohio class submarine. Trump wasn't going to sing your praises. Who else? The British or the French, with their own pathetic little nuclear arsenals that they're protecting to make themselves somehow relevant? They weren't going to sing your praises. You want Israel to sing your praises? They have an illegal nuclear weapons program. They refuse to sign the nuclear nonproliferation treaty. They're going to sing your praises. Russia's not going to sing your praises. Why would they support nuclear disarmament at a time when the United States and its allies are seeking to strategically defeat them? Neither will the Chinese. The bottom line is nobody. NATO is not going to support it because NATO has a nuclear umbrella linked to the United States. No one's going to support it. Japan, South Korea are not going to support it because they're under the American nuclear umbrella. The problem with the abolishment of nuclear weapons is it's the most logical, sane thing in the world. But until we get people to recognize that nuclear weapons are a poison pill, a suicide pill that must be removed from the medicine cabinet, we're still going to have it there. And I wish ICANN great success. I believe we have common cause. I'm trying to achieve nuclear disarmament here in the United States and promote a renewed disarmament agreements with Russia and China. But it's an uphill battle. But you guys got a cachet that nobody else has. You got a Nobel Peace Prize. That means something when it counts. It doesn't mean anything when they give it to an American president who's done nothing. But when it counts, it means something. And with you guys, it counts. So congratulations on the Nobel Peace Prize. And keep on keeping on.
All right. Somebody's asking when we're going to put this podcast on Apple so Marv696 can listen while he's at work. Well, we should do that. I agree. But in the meanwhile, we are on Spotify, so you can accomplish it that way. And that's ideal, of course, for people who want to be doing something else, like if they're driving, exercising, whatever. And that, by the way, is the reason I read all these questions. It's not because Scott can't read or I think the audience can't read. It's because some people get only the audio version. Let's see. Another question coming in on Facebook from Angel Firstly. Mr. Ritter, that would be you, Scott. Have you asked Mr. Putin for an interview? That's four question marks. I wonder what goes through people's mind when they pick multiple question marks. Like, is that supposed to mean more? I don't know. I would bet that he would accept it from you. I know the answer to this, but maybe the audience doesn't.
You know the answer?
Well, we talked about it yesterday when we were at our private chat with Malcolm.
Yeah, I'm not a journalist. I'm not the guy to interview Putin. There are other people out there. Tucker Carlson, I think, could do a better job of interviewing Putin than I could if he prepares properly. I have a specific role to play in life. I'm a good debriefer. I'm a good conversationalist. But to do interviews, it's a skill set. To do it right is a skill set. If anybody's seen me on the Scott Ritter Show, which I love, by the way, I love doing that show. Look how wooden I am. And my next question is, do you believe the world would be safer if we, I mean, come on, man.
As opposed to me reading them in my monotone, that's so much.
You look like you do. I'm just not comfortable. I would love to have a conversation with President Putin. Mm-hmm. I would love to have a conversation, even if it was filmed with President Putin, not an interview, but a conversation where we're talking about things, even with another party there, that we're having this free flowing conversation, exchange of ideas. I would love to do that. And I think I do a great job. But to do a specific interview where you're sitting down with a list of questions, interviewing, I wouldn't do a good job. And I would doubt that the presidential administration would think I would do a good job. Therefore, I would doubt that they would entertain such a request. And therefore, given the fact that there's a certainty of a turndown, I wouldn't make such a correct request because I wouldn't want to put myself or the presidential administration in a position where the answer is sort of known to be no. It would make everybody uncomfortable and just not going to do it. But I appreciate your comment.
Scotty's on fire.
Now, Jeff, if
I... Yeah, right. Hey, Vlad, baby.
But then I'd be in jail because you can't smoke dope in Russia. So
you can do it from here, though, over the web. Vlad, well, baby, what up, dude?
What's up, man?
Jenny Bien says you're getting better, more relaxed each time.
Well, maybe if I improve, maybe if I practice and don't do it, then I could do it. But like I said, I'm not a journalist, and I don't want to pretend. I'm not a journalist in that way. I do journalism. I've been registered as a journalist. I travel as a journalist sometimes. But there's a specific skill set to being an on-air interviewer. And I'm not possessing that skill set.
All right, let's see. That's Cheech and Chong. You remember Cheech and Chong?
Oh, yeah.
You're a fan of comedy?
I am. Even yours, Jeff. Even yours.
Oh, this isn't comedy. Gino from Cardiff. Unless people laugh, then I'll say, okay, I guess it was intended as such. Gino from Cardiff, Wales. Was it a single referendum taking place in the Donbass in late September last year that covered all four regions that have been incorporated into the Russian Federation, or were there separate referenda for the four? Getting that plural correct is worth extra points right there.
See, I was wondering if Gino was trying to trap me with this question, but I see he actually provided the answer. So there it is. I mean, I knew that. Referendum, referenda. My understanding is that there were four separate referenda. Each of the four territories carried out their own referendum to to vote whether or not they would join Russia. And the percentages of people voting, I think, vastly. They're very high percentages in Lugansk and Donetsk, decent percentages in Zaporizhia and Kherson. I mean, even though it was the majority, less so, which tells you that even with Russian troops there, there was a significant part of the population that didn't want to be part of Russia. And you can't ignore, you know, you can't treat as inconsequential, you know, 20-25%. I can't remember what the exact numbers were in Kherson, but there, it's indicative of the fact that there was a number of people, not a majority, but a number of people that wanted to stay with Ukraine, not be a part of Russia.
All right, let's show a little love to somebody who's watching us on Twitch. The kids, the gamers, the Hepcats. Please, can you ask Scott if it's true that Tucker Carlson's dad was a PSYOPs guy? All right,
my understanding is that Tucker Carlson's father was an employee of the CIA. What specifically did in the CIA, I don't know. Could he be involved in psychological operations? It's a possibility. Many what they call case officers, operations officers, have as one of their assigned tasks the ability to do psychological operations, information operations. There's a dedicated unit of personnel within the CIA, Directorate of Operations, that does this. These people often append themselves to various missions and various operations to provide a information warfare capacity to the overall objective. And could Tucker Carlson's father have been involved in that? Yes, but I don't know for certain, and I haven't done the research on his father to the level that allows me to say straight up, I know exactly what job he had in the CIA. I don't know what job he had in the CIA.
All right, that'll do it for this week's episode of Ask the Inspector. The lightning round goes for 1 hour every Tuesday at 3 p.m. Eastern time. Scott answers every question in 3 minutes or less. You did a great job, as usual, today, Scott. I'd like to remind the audience that we finally got our act together with the autographed books because the beloved Ann Moss, our producer, is handling the merchandise. We fired Scott from that role. His only role now is fired. So you can go to scottrittermerch.com. We also have a smart-looking T-shirt, which is being modeled there by the very muscular Ryan Milton out of Austin, Texas. And again, that's scottrittermerch.com. We will return on Friday night for the loquacious version at, what's that? Uh-oh, schedule change?
Not necessarily schedule change, location change. I am traveling to Switzerland to participate in a conference. So I will be in Switzerland on Friday night. So okay. If we want to do it at 8 o'clock my time, 5 o'clock your time, the normal time,
right?
My understanding is that Switzerland is like 7 hours ahead of us, which means like 3 a.m. Saturday. I'm willing to get up and do this, but
is this a guilt trip?
No. We just need to talk about this.
All right. So at this point, we'll probably do something on Friday, possibly at the normal time, but maybe at a different time. Is that what you're saying?
There you go, Jeff. That's the perfect way to pitch this.
I know how to read between the lines. This was a very big show. Not only we just announced a possible schedule change, but it was my sister's birthday.
Happy birthday, sister.
Linda. And as promised, Scott delivered an extra great show in honor of my sister's birthday. And also, you all heard it here, Scott made a firm promise to try marijuana the next time we're hanging out. He said he'll take a hit off the bong if I pass it to him.
You pass it to me. But yeah. Given the fact that we'll be separated by thousands of miles.
No, the next time we're hanging out. And in honor, what, you don't think we'll ever hang out again? Is that why you're making a funny face?
We've never hung out when you took a hit off a bong.
Well, I know, but you never before made a solemn promise that you would try.
I didn't make a solemn promise.
Yes, you did. It's on.
We have many witnesses. This isn't going to happen.
All right. We'll let the Old Crow Medicine Show take us out of this show with a cover version of Bob Dylan's classic Rainy Day Women. And we will see you all on Friday night or sometime on Friday. Well, when I would not be so all alone.